this. So I'm gonna
Senator Johnson.
Thank you for your courtesy again, letting me sit in.
Are we all set, Debbie? Okay, thank you. Good afternoon and welcome. I call to order a meeting of the Senate Committee on Workforce. Today is Monday, February 13th, 2017. I'd like to thank Senator Betsy Johnson for joining us. We're honored to have you here with us. Ladies and gentlemen, we have to do a few housekeeping things before we get going. We're going to open a work session to introduce a committee measure. As a reminder, a vote to introduce a measure does not designate support for the substance of the measure. It serves only to allow the proposal to be introduced.
Chair Taylor, I move that LC 4151, dated 2/10/17, be introduced as a committee bill.
Senator Knope moves that LC 4151, dated 2/10/17, be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, LC 4151 is introduced as a committee bill. I'm going to close that work session. Today, the committee is continuing the discussion on PERS, and we'll hear the first of a series of PERS bills. As I've explained previously, all PERS bills submitted to the committee will be reviewed under the same criteria that was sent out in a memo at the beginning of the session. Our goal is to be objective and transparent through the process. I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 559 and Senate Bill 560. I'm going to go ahead and add Jan Nordland is here with us today as the committee staff. For those of you who've been following, Deborah Marinov, who's usually the committee person, is out ill today. And so Jan Nordland, who has how many years of experience here?
Quite a few.
She is more than well-trained in how to handle this. And so she's going to go ahead and summarize the bills before Senator Knope testifies.
Madam Chair and committee members, Senate Bill 559, it changes the calculation of the final average salary under the PERS system for the purposes of determining a member's full formula benefit. It calculates the greater of the member's average annual salary in 5 calendar years of the member's highest annual salary before the member's retirement, or 1/5 of the total salary in the last 60 months of the active membership. It excludes from the final average salary calculation any lump sum that's paid for accrued vacation, and it requires a recalculation of the employer contribution rates to reflect any savings attributable to the act, and it makes corrected rates effective July 1st, 2017. Provides for an expedited Supreme Court review and declares an emergency. Senate Bill 560, it eliminates any new memberships in the IAP under PERS. It establishes new accounts for each active member, and it redirects the employee's contributions of 6% into the new account as opposed to the IAP. It applies amounts in new accounts to costs of the member's pension or other retirement benefits that accrue on or after January 1, 2018. Requires a recalculation of the employer contribution rates to reflect any savings attributable to the act. Makes corrected rates effective July 1, 2017. It allows an inactive member to receive distributions of amounts in the member's new accounts in certain circumstances. And it establishes a cap of $100,000 on the amount of the salary for the calendar year included in the calculation of the final average salary. And provides an exception for judge members. Provides for the expedited Supreme Court review. Declares an emergency. There are no amendments before you today on either one of these bills.
Okay, so we are going to go ahead and have Senator Knope testify. These are his bills, Senate Bill 559 and 560. And before you start, Senator Knope, I just want to clarify for the audience who's here today, thank you all for coming. It's so great to have all of you here today, so we really appreciate that. After Senator Knope speaks, we are going to have, from the Oregon Business Council, we're going to have Tim Nisbet and John Tapania come up and speak. And then after that, we will have Melissa Unger, I see her right here in the audience, from SEIU 503, and Jared Mason from Oregon Education Association, and Brandon Silence from the firefighters come up and speak as a group of three. And then after that, we'll move to the testimony from the general public. And we are going to go ahead and get that organized as we're up here today. We have a lot of you here today. So it's very nice that all of you are so interested in what we're talking about. And we're going to make certain that we try to get to as many people as we possibly can today. So the hearing is most likely going to run over past 5 o'clock. So, or past, how late are we planning on going, Tom?
You're scheduled in here till 4:45, but
We may go a little bit over. So just so everybody can kind of get settled and we can get going. Senator Canope, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Taylor, and members of the committee. I'm State Senator Tim Canope, representing Senate District 27, which includes Bend, Redmond, Tumalo, and Sun River. Many of you know that PERS has been an issue for quite some time and that I've worked on this issue before. I was first appointed to a task force back in 2002 and was not completely aware of all the issues that we would have to deal with. The 2003 reforms that happened and were upheld by the courts made significant changes to the PERS system. And then over the preceding about 10 years, nothing really happened substantially as it relates to PERS. And then in 2013, the legislature took up in special session a bill that would make changes to the system that included really just addressing the COLA and retirement and tax issues. And of course, we all know that the COLA issue for in large part was thrown out by the courts at that time. And part of the reason we're here today is to address the unfunded liability that exists in PERS today. And the reason that I feel so strongly that we need to address the PERS system again is because if we do not, we will have a catastrophic collapse of the system. It may not happen next year, but in three or four bienniums from now, the rates are essentially going to be nearly double what they are today. And as many of you know, our local districts and the state, our school districts, are already having trouble affording their PERS costs that they currently have. So the court has narrowed our ability to deal with the issue over time. And so the bills that we're looking at today are prospective in nature, which is critically important because the courts have said and our legislative council has said that we can only address essentially issues going forward. So it can affect a tier one or tier two either employee or retirees benefits really in any way going backward. So we have really three significant reasons that we're gonna need to act. And one was obviously the most recent court decision. The second was the, some people call it the Great Recession, but the loss of earnings over that significant period of time where it really kind of undid the PERS system in a substantial way. And it's vulnerable to that, again, should we have a significant market correction. And then, of course, the overcrediting that happened in 1979 through 1999 that moved about $3.2 billion plus interest over those 20 years that should have gone into the gain loss reserve that went into employee accounts. And so those things together have really led us to the spot that we're at today. And so we have essentially two bills, and I would just like to say that these are starting points, and I recognize that there's people who are going to oppose the bills, and I understand that. But if we don't act, what's going to happen some years from now, and I think it's probably sooner rather than later, is that we'll have local districts that are wanting to declare bankruptcy, and I think that is not a situation that any of us want to deal with, because there is no real roadmap for that happening. And it will happen, especially to smaller and mid-sized districts and cities. And so the legislature has to do what we can to deal with the issue as limited by the courts. And so Senate Bill 559 changes the calculation of the final average salary for purposes of the public employee retirement system to use a 5-year of salary instead of 3. And as long as it's prospective, I believe that this will be upheld by the courts, and I think our legislative council has said the same thing. And then, you know, 560 is another bill that redirects employee contributions that otherwise would have gone into the individual account program, essentially back into PERS. It also, for the years beginning in 2018, caps the salary that can be considered for the salary as it relates to the retirement benefit to $100,000. And our legislative council has also said that as long as those are prospective, that they believe that they would be constitutional. And these are just starting points. You know, these bills are just a starting point. Somebody has to go first. That would be me. So I'm open to any suggestion that helps us really protect the system. And I've said over and over again, I will say again today, that the best reason to deal with the PERS issue is to protect the system for retirees and for those future retirees. Because if we do not, the failure to act will lead to a catastrophic failure. And that's a failure to deliver services. That's a failure, likely, as I said, of cities and counties and special districts. And I think it is in the best interest of all of us to work together to try to figure out a solution to the issue that confronts us. And our world really has changed quite a bit over the last 15 years. And there was an attorney, Greg Hartman, who indicated that I had made a statement back in 2003 in regards to the system and specifically to OPSERP, that, you know, that it was fair and that it was affordable and sustainable. And that's true. But in 2003, I think we have to remember that the court had not acted on the reforms that we put before them, and we did not have the losses that substantially changed our system and our ability to deal with it. And, you know, if we're looking at the issue of fairness, there are tens of thousands of Oregonians who lost their pensions during the downturn, the Great Recession, and essentially pretty much lost everything. And thankfully, that did not happen to the PERS system. And so when we look at how we can address the system, I think it's important that we be as thoughtful as we can be. I know there are people that will come behind me that have ideas that are a little bit outside the box. But nonetheless, I think it's our job, it's our duty to address the issues that confront us in such a significant way. And one of the things that really brought this home to me was talking to my school district and the situation that they're in if we don't act. And essentially, in the Ben Lapine School District, we have about 1,000 teachers, just rough numbers. And if we fail to act and no additional money beyond continuous service level that happens, we'll lose 66 teachers each year, every year, for at least the next 6 years. And imagine what that does to class size or student performance. And I'm not willing to sacrifice a generation of kids in order to not fix a system that we have the ability to make some changes. And I would tell you that even if we do act, the sum total of the total change is probably less than a quarter of the unfunded liability that exists today. And so we are limited in scope. There's obviously we can start a new plan for new hires, and all those things I think need to be reviewed, as do these bills. And I could go into a fair amount of detail section by section on these bills. I don't know if the chair wants me to do that, because I think we want to hear the testimony from the people who are here today, because I know people drove a long way to be here and clearly have either taken time off work or taken time from their daily schedules to come down and testify. And so I want to make sure that they have the opportunity to do that. But these bills will, you know, for me, are just a starting point. And I hope that the people that come after me have some constructive and thoughtful ideas for us, because I think the only answer to this situation that really we can't have is no. Because no just puts off the inevitable and ultimately leads to probably significantly reduced retirements for any number of people, and ultimately the courts are going to decide how that will work out. And I don't think we want to be put in that situation, and so I trust that we will have a good discussion, and that the people that are affected will also have some ideas about what we might be able to do. Obviously, we could raise taxes, but if you look at how many billions of dollars are going to need to be added to the system, we couldn't raise taxes high enough. And even if we did, it would lead to businesses leaving our state, and so ultimately it would lead to less revenue than anticipated and less people participating. And I think our goal should be to encourage more people to be participating as taxpaying citizens of Oregon and growing our economy and growing businesses. And so I hope that we can have a dialogue, and ultimately that this committee will find a way to do what we can to relieve the unfunded liability that currently, according to Milliman USA, stands at close to $22 billion, but as many of us know, that's an assumption that we are making 7.5% on our earnings, and we all know that hasn't taken place, and that probably the 10-year average is closer to $5 billion. And so if you calculate that, the system isn't $22 billion in unfunded liability. It's probably more like $40 to $50 billion in unfunded liability. And that's before any market correction. So I'm going to stop there. And we can go into plenty of detail if people want to about each section of each bill. But I want to make sure that I answer your questions, and that then people behind me and in other rooms around the Capitol have a chance to testify today. So with that, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Knope. Does anybody have any questions for Senator Knope? Senator Amanda Sanderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The one thing that I want to see happen is, or to know, not happen, but to know, is a bill like Senate Bill, the two bills, 559 and 560, how do they really affect our unfunded liability now? Is it going to make that much of a difference? When I take a look at the changes that have already been made on with Tier 3 and OPSR, Tier 1 are gone in 20, 30 years, we shouldn't have this problem. And so I don't know if you've done too much work on how much difference these two bills would make in the unfunded liability now.
Yeah, so Madam Chair and Senator Mona Sanderson, I think if you do the major elements of what are in these two bills or something else that is similar, because I know there are other ideas out there, and you know, there's some great ideas and some very interesting thoughts. But if you do that, I think I kind of alluded to this, but if you assume that our unfunded liability is the $22 billion that Millman says today, I think you could probably lower that between 16 and 17 billion to that level. So, I mean, you're talking $5 or $6 billion, and it's essentially a replacement of the $5 or $6 billion that was thrown out by the court as it relates to the reforms in 2013 grand bargain that didn't hold up. But again, if you fail to act, if we fail to act, do we think that the people of Oregon are going to say, yeah, we need a new tax increase, and it's all going to go to essentially pay for the public employee retirement system? The citizens of Oregon already rejected a substantial tax increase that they were told was going to go to education and senior services and things like that, which is, I think, a lot more interesting probably to the public than a tax that essentially is going just to pay for an unfunded liability to a PERS system where people who they had previously elected failed to act, and people who were appointed to boards acted, in my view, not in the best interest of the system. And so I think that's why it's important that we address it, because I think it, on the revenue side, I think it makes it easier to convince people that we're attempting to be responsible, we're attempting to do what we can do to fix the system. But fixing the system entirely is not under our control anymore at this point. It's either under the court's control as it relates to the decisions they've already made, or it's under the court's control as it relates to decisions that they'll make when ultimately the system or entities enter bankruptcy in order to attempt to get out of the debt that they can no longer pay as public entities.
I want to clarify one thing, and I want to put this down on the record. It's my understanding that in the state of Oregon, an individual government with a city, county, or the state cannot declare bankruptcy, and I just want to have committee staff clarify that. We don't have LC here, but for the next meeting, because I don't believe that we allow local jurisdictions or the state to declare bankruptcy. I just want to get, I don't know the exact answer. That's my understanding. I just want to have that clarified. So for the next meeting, we can talk about that. But does anybody else have any questions for Senator Knope? Okay. Well, we can always bring him back because he's going to come back up here. Thank you so much for doing that. We are going to go ahead and call up Tim Nisbet and John Tapania. I think they're right outside the door. To come in. Gentlemen. Thank you,
Jay Taylor.
Yes, members of the committee. Thank you both for coming. We, as you can see, we have a lot of people here today. And so originally we were hoping, we have a panel of three coming up right after you. So I had talked about 5 minutes for each, but I'm trying to keep it even. So I'd like to have you do 3-4 minutes each, because then we have three people coming up after you. And also want to make certain that we are talking about these two specific bills today, and we'll be having additional hearings in the future. I know both of you have done a lot of work on this subject, and we can explore the possibility of having you come back to talk about it in another context. But is there anything else you want to bring to my attention, Jan?
Do you want to mention for people to know the 333s?
Mm-hmm. that in room 343 is the overflow. If folks want to go and have a seat for those who are out in the hallway, there, I think that we have the Sergeant Arms letting folks know that 343 is the room for overflow if you'd like to actually have a chair so you're not standing the whole time. So let's go ahead, and are we going to have a timer, or are we going to just go ahead and keep track of it up here?
For these gentlemen, you're giving them
about 3-4 minutes each. So we'll go ahead and we'll...
Can you set the timer for 4, Debbie?
Yeah, we'll just go ahead and get going here. And if, remember, of course, to state your name and who you're with. And so which of you would you like to start?
I'll go first. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Nesbitt, please start.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tim Nesbitt. Currently, I'm serving as an advisor to the Oregon Business Council on how to best address the need for PERS reform. In that capacity, I help to frame both the problem statement and an overview of potential solutions in a 2-page policy paper presented at the Business Summit last December. And we've passed that out as a reference for Senate Bills 559 and 560. As you can see, that policy paper outlines 2 ways to approach solutions on the cost side. There's a third element on the investment side that I will not address today. One way involves prospective benefit reductions of the kind incorporated in Senate Bill 559 and a portion of Senate Bill 560. The other involves prospective cost sharing with specific reference to the mechanism of the IAP, the Individual Account Program, which is also incorporated in Senate Bill 560. Well, let me be clear. Both of these approaches are consistent with keeping the promise for benefits already earned and with maintaining an adequate retirement program going forward. Further, neither of these approaches would have any effect on employee paychecks, nor if managed well, will they reduce the total compensation of employees going forward, because there will always be pay increases, health benefit increases, et cetera. But our policy paper also cautions that none of these changes will by themselves answer the question about the best design for both an adequate and affordable retirement system in the future, one that's adequate for public employees and affordable for our taxpayers. Nor do these solutions necessarily align with the best way to address fairness in what will amount to a redesign of the system going forward. Legacy costs are inherently unfair because they require shifting the burden of one generation's benefits onto another. In this case, the unfairness inherent in having to absorb these legacy costs in PERS will squeeze public budgets, constrain public services, put new demands on taxpayers, and burden public employees with costs that many of them did not create. But if we do nothing, those impacts will still occur. So that creates a responsibility, best handled as a shared responsibility, to shape solutions that mitigate these impacts and recognize the equity issues that arise in this process. Do we let all of these impacts pass through to the consumers of public services, to our children in K-12, to the needy and vulnerable, to our higher ed students, to the safety of our communities because of budget cuts? Do we use them to demand more support for public services from our taxpayers? Do we let payroll costs for PERS take first claim on future increases in compensation for employees, leaving less for pay increase and staffing levels? We can say mistakes were made, but not by me, and say we don't want to do anything about this problem. We can refuse to be part of the solution. But doing nothing does not maintain a status quo. It creates a new dynamic of cascading effects that will negatively affect us all in different ways, sometimes unfairly, but unavoidably. Senate Bill 559 and 560, to the credit of their sponsors, attempt to manage this future more thoughtfully. And they do so in a way that meets what I hope we can agree are compelling principles for PERS reform. First, they keep the promise of benefits already earned, as required, with more clarity than ever before by the Supreme Court's Morrow decision. Second, they establish a shared responsibility with current employees for dealing with the damage and the burden of future cost increases. There are other principles to be brought to bear as well. We would recommend that proposals for prospective benefit reductions and cost sharing among the active employees take into account the differences that exist between employees hired before and after August 2003. The unfunded liability for earlier hires is many times greater than the cost of those hired after 2003. It is also the case that some reforms can have a greater impact on lower paid employees than higher paid employees. So it would be helpful to look at the impacts of each reform in terms of the proportionality of effort by each of these employee groups. And finally, I'll say we're pleased that these are coming forward now because we are on the cusp of significant impacts starting in the next biennium. And one principle here ought to be that when you're in a hole, stop digging. We should get this right so that it's not going to severely impact budgets and services in the coming biennium. And with that, I'll turn to John Tapponia to give you more details.
Senator Taylor, members of the committee, I'm John Tapponia, president of Echo Northwest, also consulting along with Tim to the Oregon Business Council on this topic, as I did in 2013. And I will speak very specifically to the two bills that were discussed just before us. My overarching comment would be there's a lot of pieces to this puzzle, and how you put these pieces together matters an awful lot. And between them, these two bills introduced or laid a number of pieces on the table to look at. It didn't lay all the pieces, all the puzzle pieces on the table. But how we analyze them and put them together will determine whether we meet Tim's standard of fairness and sustainability of the system going forward. So just stepping through Senate Bill 559, its key feature is changing the final average salary calculation to be a five-year calculation rather than a three-year calculation. That is certainly a feature. It appears to be permissible, according to the legal counsel, and is the method by which the Washington teacher retirement system calculates its final average salary. I think it saves, if memory serves, or would reduce payroll costs by about 0.7 percentage points. That would translate into an additional school day delivered statewide year-round when applied to the schools. And just so as you start to evaluate these, some rules of thumb for each percentage point of payroll of payroll reduction that you get through some kind of options and changes. Each payroll point is 325 teachers or 1.3 school days delivered statewide per year, and certainly some number of firefighters as well. Moving on to Senate Bill 560, the redirection of the individual account program. Those have been advanced. They were discussed first, I think, in 2011 by the City Club of Portland, in part. I think that those are important pieces to investigate. They operate differently for Tier 1 and Tier 2 than they would for OPSERP. Redirecting the individual account program for Tier 1 and Tier 2, you are still left with the full formula of Tier 1 and Tier 2 as being the lowest sort of safety net benefit that you would get, which is 50% replacement. Some other people potentially go out under money match, et cetera. But moving that IAP over for Tier 1, Tier 2 leaves a full career employee no worse off than 50% replacement of salary, which then together with Social Security could get you up to 80%. It is different for OPSERP employees. If you redirect the IAP for OPSERP employees, the underlying formula replaces 45% of salary, which if you went way back into the 70s and 80s when the PERS board was talking about adequacy very explicitly, they were looking for a 50% benchmark as adequacy, so you'd be shy of that. So those that IAP redirection needs to be thought of differently for those different tiers, and I would encourage folks to do that. The other feature, the $100,000 cap in SB 560, I think is introducing a notion of some kind of differential treatment of higher paid employees, which may be helpful if designed correctly. I think in this particular case, there's no inflation index, and one would have to go back and sort of think about how that might work in practice. Was that my 4 minutes?
I think so.
Okay.
Does anybody have any questions for either of our presenters? Maybe Senator Canopa, or the two of you, maybe you could. I'm trying to understand something from looking at the 6% redirect bill. So if someone can walk me through here, that as I understand it, currently, if we were to, the when an individual is currently working and they give 6% of their paycheck every month to the IAP, which is what they've been doing anywhere from a year, 5 years, 10 years, et cetera. But now going forward, we were to say, you're no longer going to put the money into the IAP. You're going to put it into, we'll call it PERS, to keep the conversation simple. Then how is it, and then upon the retirement, even if it's, you know, started tomorrow, then they would no longer have their individual IAP, correct?
They would have their IAP that exists currently.
But no, but I'm saying if you started tomorrow, they would, if a new employee started today with the state and started work tomorrow, there would be no IAP.
I think the PERS agency probably is the best to answer that question, because I think we'd probably just be doing an interpretation of how they would deal with it. I do know that kind of as of today, you know, like if you were dealing with a $50,000 salary and you had the 6% IAP, which is $3,000, and you had the employer contribution, let's call it 20%, is $10,000. Under the redirect, the members would still have their $50,000 salary. The member pension account contribution of $3,000 would go into the pension system, so the employer's contribution would be 14%, so $7,000 instead of the $10,000 that they otherwise would have paid. And so that's how it creates the savings.
Right, but for the individual employee, they would no longer have, instead of walking away at the end of the day with 6% going into their paycheck and then having that invested, that money is then going into PERS, and so they're walking, instead of walking out with the IEP account and their PERS account, now they're just walking out of the door at the end of their time with whatever the start date is of whatever was already in the IAP, and they're going to get their the defined benefit. They're always going to get, we all agree on that, they're going to get their defined benefit. That's not going to change. But in essence, it just seems to, I'm trying to understand how it can't be perceived that the 6% that they're getting less. That's what I'm trying to understand.
Let's ask the PERS agency, because Steve does a good job of explaining.
Okay, we'll just clarify that, and then we'll move into you guys can step back for one moment, stay in the room, please. We'll have Steve Rodman, would you come up and just clarify this so that I understand it? I'm sorry if everyone else understands it, I'm the only one that doesn't.
Thank you.
Okay, so we can all, does everyone want to understand this? Great. We'll just get to the bottom of that question, and maybe you can use really simple, I'm sorry to call you up, Mr. Rodman, without any warning.
Sorry.
Here you are. I think this happens to you a lot, though. People
it
start
does.
Talking about PERS, and then we need someone like you to just explain to us in the scenario of if someone's currently an employee, make sure we're saying this correctly. So someone's currently an employee, and tomorrow we were to pass this bill with a 6% redirect, what would happen with their paycheck and the IAP versus their defined benefit versus if a person started with the state tomorrow? If you could kind of lay that out for me, please, and then we'll move into the next panel. I'm sorry, everybody. I just need to understand this myself.
Thank you, Chair Taylor, members of the committee. For the record, Steve Rodman with PERS. So good split between people who currently have an IAP balance and those that start their career. If someone starts their career after this bill becomes effective, they will not have an IAP. When they retire, they will have a defined benefit based on the OPSERP formula, 1.5% for every year, 1.8% if you're police and fire. So they will only get the defined benefit. For someone who has an IAP account balance, if this bill becomes effective, then their IAP account will be retained until they retire or withdraw, and whatever is in there will be paid out under whatever terms that member chooses. They will no longer have contributions into that account. Consequently, the balance in the account will be lower at retirement than it would be if 6% was going in the time between now and then. So going back to one of my early corollaries, the only way to save money in a system is reducing benefits. You're reducing the amount of the IAP that a member will get upon retirement by redirecting it into an account to pay for the pension.
Okay, that helped me. Did anyone else have any? Senator Hansel.
Well, I had a question of the previous panel.
Oh, yes, we can bring them back up. No problem. Okay, thank you, Mr. Did anyone else have a question for Mr. Rodman? I'm sorry, I just needed that clarified. Yes, do you have a question? You want Mr. Rodman to come
sorry,
back?
Sorry, Mr. Rodman.
I know, musical chairs. But these are the details.
Answered on the fly. It's quick.
Everyone should be thrilled that we care enough to ask the following, the detailed questions. Senator
We're
Johnson.
We're talking about six in totality. Could it be some subset of six, three? Does it have to be the full amount of the 6%?
Chair Taylor, Senator Johnson, it can, of course, be whatever you define. And so we have just, the concept is to redirect 6%. That shifts 6% of the cost from the employer to the member. If it's 3 and 3, it's 3 and 3, 4 and 2, whatever it is you decide.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Hansel, you have a question?
My question was just, I believe I heard you say this, but I just want to be on the record that you would feel that Senate Bill 559 and 560 meet judicial muster as presented or not.
I'll go ahead. Neither of us is an attorney, but we looked at the opinions issued by legislative counsel as well as as well as the court decision. And you see on the handout here, your counsel weighed in with whether there was whether each of these items is likely permissible under the Moore decision or whether there's a risk of invalidation. So that's the answer from your counsel.
Did you have something you wanted to add, Mr. DePoyne?
I was just going to add that I'm not an attorney, so.
So just so everyone knows that, as I said several times, we sent out this criteria early on in the process, and once we hear about some more bills and concepts and just general ideas, then these bills will go through a vetting process, and we have technical experts that will be looking at the bills and will be able to come forward and answer these very detailed questions. And so legislative counsel will be coming forward and talking about each bill. We'll have individuals from the PERS office. We'll have LFO here. We'll have DAS talking about what possible impacts there will be on the collective bargaining agreements that the state already has in place. This is an important fact that we can't simply ignore. And so I just wanted to make sure everyone was aware of that. Does anyone have any other questions for
Not for them, but for you on that very point then. Yes. So we really are only privy to our own legislative counsel. We have two attorneys that came and spoke to us, Hartman and Gary. Mm-hmm. Can we ask them what they think, or is that totally we'd have to hire them and spend millions of dollars?
I'm hoping that they're Oregonians and they'll just come forward and participate in the process. But I think that we can certainly, Jan can make a note of that, and we can talk to, I don't know that I can answer that question right now. Last time I just called and invited them, and they appeared. So I don't know if we can do that again. Hopefully they would come again. It's an important issue, but let's hear what legislative counsel has to say. And we want to respect the different agency folks' time, and they will come forward and talk about all the bills at another time. But thank you both for coming.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. So we're going to go ahead and call up Melissa Unger from SEIU 503, Jared Mason from Oregon Education Association, and Brandon Silence from the Firefighters. Well, I'm a little bit of an old-fashioned individual, so I'm going to go ahead and go with ladies first.
Thank you, I think. Chair Taylor, Vice Chair Knope, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today. My name's Melissa Unger, and I'm the political director for SEIU Local 503. We represent 65,000 workers in Oregon. Our workers include a majority of state workers, child welfare workers, road maintenance workers, and many more. And we also represent about 30,000 caregivers, home care workers, nursing home workers, private nonprofit workers, and child care providers who have little to no retirement benefits. So about half of our membership, 30,000 of our workers, are PERS recipients. We are a union of publicly funded workers, so we are acutely aware of the budget challenges and the fact that increasing employer rates put pressure on the budget. The answer to the budget challenges, though, cannot be to decimate retirement benefits of low-income and middle-income Oregonians who had no role in creating the PERS liability. More than 60% of our public sector members are in OPSERP, the lowest level of benefits, and their average salary is approximately $46,000. The cost of their retirement is not creating the unfunded liability, yet some would want them to carry the burden of paying for it. And while there is a narrative in the newspapers and in the legislature that there's been nothing done to address the growing PERS liability, that is not true. In 2013, when legislators cut COLAs, the people that were impacted the most are OPSERP members, since they have fewer years of service for a blended COLA. And as you will hear today, those were double-digit decreases in their benefits. And just like in 2013, OPSERP members will again be disproportionately impacted by the proposals being discussed today. The proposal to divert the 6% of the IAP raids the individual accounts of OPSERP members to pay down the state's liability for retirees. And as you've heard, 70% of the unfunded liability is for retirees and inactives. The Supreme Court is clear. You cannot take those benefits away, nor can you take away benefits already earned. So stealing the 6% is taking a middle-class Oregonian's retirement to pay for other people's retirement. The proposal reduces a recently hired OPSERP member's retirement by 30 to 40%. That is both unfair and extreme. These cuts also break the contract the state and other employers have made with workers. Proposals to slash PERS should not happen in a vacuum. The discussion must happen in the context of total worker compensation, both on what an employee receives and what the state pays. The 2016 DAS salary survey shows that total compensation for a state employee is 98% of compensation for comparable employees in the private sector. That includes salary, health benefits, and PERS. Over the years, compensation packages have prioritized benefits over salary, and choices have been made. And employers get a bigger bang for their buck for dollars spent on tax-exempt benefits than on taxable salaries. And I also want to point out something that else is not true, as some people have said, that public workers don't pay into their own retirement. SEIU members do. Many others do, too. At the state, workers agreed to take over the 6% pickup. Our members did so with the belief that the money would be going into their accounts. The choice to take over the 6% pickup meant that our workers got lower COLAs than other workers at the bargaining table. Now you're changing the rules, taking 6% of their compensation away and going back on the word as an employer. Surely that doesn't feel legal. I'm going to try to speed up a little bit. I just want to give one example of a worker who works at the Oregon State Hospital. Her name is Brandy. She recently just got back after work after being on medical leave for being injured on the job. Since her time at the state hospital, she has had 9 concussions, 2 knee surgeries, a broken nose, and multiple black eyes. In spite of this, she loves her job. And as you can imagine, she goes home exhausted every day. She is stressed, and she is expected to do that for 30 years before she's able to retire. Without salary or retirement security, and with the knowledge that the rules could change at any minute, who would be willing to do that work? And the last note I will make is that these proposals look at PERS in isolation. They create a risk of increased costs. In 1995, when ballot measure 8 passed, which is something very similar to SB 560, the state increased salaries by 7% after a statewide strike. In theory, Senate Bill 560 may bring down the employer rates for PERS, but it does not necessarily bring down the costs of running government. Thank you very much for your time.
Madam Chair.
Afternoon.
Yes.
Before the next speaker, would it be possible to have a copy of your testimony entered into the record? I mean, give us a written copy.
Yes, Senator Taylor. Sorry, I have not had a chance to email it, but I have every intention to do so.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Taylor, members of the committee. Jared Mason Gear, representing the Oregon Education Association and our 44,000 educators, representing a range from K-12 classroom teachers, community college faculty, cafeteria workers, school custodians, enrollment specialists, academic advisors, and so forth, collectively serving approximately 600,000 K-12 school children and roughly 70,000 community college students across the state of Oregon. Testifying in opposition to Senate Bills 559 and 560, I guess you'll hear from a variety of workers here this afternoon. After all, this is the Workforce Committee, and these are workforce questions that impact real people and real families. I won't go into too many specifics of some of the examples of the types of people that will be impacted, but wanted to interject some what I think are important context around the conversation we're having and the types of impacts and the realities on the ground for our workers. So just as some context, the starting salary of a beginning teacher in Oregon is $35,000 a year. In a district like Portland Public Schools, the salary is $38,000 a year for a starting teacher. In a place where oftentimes a one-bedroom apartment, it costs over $1,000 per month. It's also, I think, important to recognize that, like many other workers, we have workers around the state, including in the metro area, who pick up their 6%. So of all of the bargaining units that OEA represents, we have about 235 contracts statewide. Roughly a quarter of those contracts are places where the 6% contribution to the IEP already is picked up by the employee in those contract negotiations. And increasingly, our members have been opting in the course of their contract negotiations to shift over and take on those contributions themselves in their negotiations, in part because of the uncertainty that continues to exist around what actions the legislature will or won't take to further cut those benefits. So I wanted to make sure that that was known. I think it's also important to recognize the, you know, in addition to all of the personal impacts that will be laid out in further testimony, that there's a serious workforce question here, and the ability to attract and retain highly talented workers. I think, you know, Oregonians really value public service. Oregonians rely heavily on the work that public employees do, whether that's our members in the classroom or that's the emergency responders, many of whom are represented here today. People want there to be highly qualified, talented professionals there to do those jobs. We're already seeing in Oregon that there is a real difficulty attracting educators, mostly at this point in specialties, but we'll begin to see those more broadly as well. So right now, the U.S. Department of Education already has identified what are called teacher shortage areas for the state of Oregon, meaning that there's been determined to be an inadequate supply of those particular types of educators. Among those that are currently on that list, English language learner or ELL teachers, math, science, Spanish, special education, school nurses, speech language pathologists. We anticipate that will begin to be spread even more broadly throughout the teaching profession over the course of the coming years. So as we are having a workforce question, I think it's really important also to think about what kinds of impacts will further attacks, further raids on educator retirement benefits have on our ability to bring in qualified, talented professionals to do that kind of work. So I'm right on time. I will just sort of reiterate how important this is to the average working person, average family, the kinds of benefits that that they count on to be able to retire. In many cases, that's already a pipe dream for people that are working on limited incomes. I urge you to reject these unfair, illegal, and extreme attacks on worker retirement benefits.
Okay, thank you.
Hello. Madam Good Chair, afternoon. Will there be time for questions after the final testifier?
Yes, of course. Would you like to, but is there something you feel you need to ask now?
I do. I'd like you to help me kind of rationalize my thinking on the fact that the failure to address some kind of issue with PERS results, as Senator Knope testified to, with teacher layoffs and the concomitant rise in the number of kids that are in a classroom and less professionals in the school helping our kids. Help me reconcile that, because it seems to me that as school districts are now being forced to make reductions with the rising amount the PERS is eating into the available resources, your members seem uniquely situated to be caught in this kind of ironic conundrum. Could you comment on that?
I think that's a Senator Taylor, Senator Johnson. It's a difficult question that you raise for certain, and I guess I reject that particular framing that has been used very frequently when it comes to this idea that in order to for teachers to continue to be employed in the classroom, that we have to continue to chip away at and whittle away at their overall compensation. I mean, I think the reality is that in order to bring talented professionals into the classroom, we have to pay them a salary, we have to pay them health care benefits, and we have to pay them retirement benefits. You're going to hear from a lot of Tier 3 workers, officer members today, many of whom have been who have dedicated themselves to a career of service, but who have at this point been in the classroom 4 or 5 years. The idea that they should be making those sacrifices to allow for their profession to continue to exist, or for the trade-off is for them to accept yet another round of chipping away at their benefits, so that they don't continue to have 50 or perhaps down the line 60 students in the classroom, doesn't seem like the actual question that we're debating. And I think I'd be happy to come visit with you further. I think it's no secret what solutions my organization, the Oregon Education Association, has proposed before and continues to propose as the best path for addressing a lot of these challenges that we face.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, we're going to go ahead and move to Mr. Silence.
Good afternoon. Chair Taylor, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brandon Silence. I've been a firefighter for 10 years. I'm an engineer, which means I drive the fire truck and I operate all the specialized equipment. I'm also a certified paramedic and a hazmat technician. I work here in Salem at Fire Station Number 10, and I live in Clackamas County. Thank you for letting me share my story with you today. I am an OPCERT member, the lowest level of PERS benefit. That means I have a reduced pension benefit below previous pensions offered, along with an individual account. 6% of my monthly salary goes into that individual account program. When the 2003 reforms were passed, public employees were told the IAP accounts would be a major piece of our total retirement, and that they would help the state save enough money for the pension system to be sustainable. But now are there proposals to take the IAP away and cut the pensions again? I'm hopeful that by sharing my story publicly, you will understand what deep retirement cuts OPCERT members like myself are facing with Senate Bills 559 and 560. I know exactly what the bills will do to my retirement. With the help of a certified actuarial analysis, we ran the numbers. I would like to share those with you.
Please do.
My individual account program will be slashed 48%, nearly in half. If Senate Bill 560 passes and you take the 6% of my salary away to pay the state's pension obligation. In addition to losing 48% of my individual account, I'll also lose 38% of my monthly pension if Senate Bill 559 passes. Overall, that's a total of 41% total reduction in my retirement benefit. And that's on top of the 16% reduction I'm already taking because of the 2013 cost of living reductions. I don't know what I will do if these bills are successful. I can't make up those differences. They are simply too large. I am proud to be a firefighter. Serving my community matters to me, and I would like to think that I matter to my community and to the state. My fellow firefighters and I show up to work every day, and we answer the call, no matter who calls. We help everyone. We do our jobs. We meet our commitments. I take this very personally because it is personal. This is my retirement you're talking about here, not just some numbers on a budget sheet. I think it's time for the state of Oregon to once and for all meet its commitment to me and to all public employees who are here today to share their stories. When you're talking about PERS, please remember, you're talking about us. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I follow up? First of all, you did a great job. Thank you for coming here today. I've not met you before. But those numbers that you used, the 48%, et cetera, that's for your individual account? Is that what you were sharing?
Chair Taylor, yes, that is correct. It is my personal account.
Yeah. And so in that analysis that was done, is the number significant as it sounds, because of your what appears to be relatively young age? Is the gap?
Yeah, Chair Taylor, I'll have to defer that question to.
I'm just trying to understand because there are. And just before you answer, Ms. Hunger, the reason I'm bringing this up is because I think that we as a committee have to really weigh any bills that are considered about what the impact will be for everybody at different times of their career. So, of course, in not just at the state, but throughout the whole state of all the public entities, where someone could be in the system for 5 years, someone could be starting tomorrow, someone could have been in there for 20 years, different types of situations. And so I just want to try to understand that in a little more detail. I don't know if you feel that you can.
Yeah, Chair Taylor, members of the committee, I think quickly just in the actual actuarial analysis, we assumed a lot of things. So we assumed that people would work for the extended period of time. So for a firefighter, it would be for their time before they could retire. So it's based on his fact that he started 10 years ago, where he is now, and then the changes from now until the end of when he would retire. Right. So that's how the analysis was done on a handful of people. And so it was done in that kind of model. So it's because of where he is in his current career and what he would assume to how long he would assume to work if he worked the entire time of kind of until he retires.
Okay, well, thank you for clarifying that, because of course that's exactly what an actuarial analysis is going to do, but it's specific to you. Sure. And it wouldn't necessarily apply to all public employees, so just to have that on the record, because that would be a little bit different.
And Chair Taylor, members of the committee, just to add to that, the range on the ones we have done is really in that range that I said, that 30 to 40%. It's like 28% to 41%, these two bills combined. The range of the different kinds of public employees that we have done the actuarial analysis on, that is the range of the cut to their overall benefits in the IAP and their pension cuts, just so people have a sense. And we've done, I think, 3 to 4 actuarial analysis, and I think they range now from 28 to 41%.
Okay, thank you. So when... not today, but as I referenced before, we'll have some technical experts who are going to come in and talk about this and this type of thing. And an actuarial analysis that has been done by the Milliman Company has already occurred on Senator Knope's bills, and so those will be discussed in this committee as well. And then just so everyone understands and can kind of see those numbers. Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Something that would be helpful to me when we get to that point is if we could have a spreadsheet that looks at age kind of across the board of the impact based on the age of the individual in the workforce, maybe coupled with kind of impacted changes in Social Security as well for the for the younger workers.
Just so,
I just would like to see the equity as it goes across generations in the workforce.
Just for clarification, are you're speaking about age, or are you also talking about time of hire?
I'm talking about both age and time of age.
Years
and
of service.
Years of service, but I mean, I think that there is, if you look at people that come into service after 2003, I think they're disproportionately going to be younger than people that came into service before 1995.
Okay. You have that chance?
Okay. Request,
Senator Johnson, do you have a question?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for coming. So now we are going to go ahead. We have three people who traveled over 100 miles, and it is our custom here in the legislature to have those folks come and testify first. And so I am going to bring forward Sherry Helt and Peggy Kincaid.
Kincaid?
Yep. So if those are both from the Ben Lapine School, and then on deck, if we could have Barbara Walsh come and speak. And then we only have three people that have come over 100 miles, and then we can move down the list.
Why don't you call the others on deck?
And so then after Barbara Walsh, the Emily Gothard, Tiffany Linford, and
Elka
Burton from SEIU. Hopefully those names are resonating. We'll come up. So we have three sets on deck. First, Sherry Helt, Peggy Kincaid. Then we'll have Barbara Walsh. And then the third group will be Emily Gothard, Tiffany Linford, and Ilka Burton.
There are others coming in.
Pardon me, can you? What is your name, please?
My name is Barbara Walsh.
Okay, so you're going to come up next. You're welcome. Why don't you step back for a minute? The next up is Sherry Helt and Peggy Kincaid. Sorry about that. I apologize. Are Sherry or Peggy here?
They might be running down from 3:15.
Okay, all right. Well, go ahead and we'll have Barbara. In the interest of time, Barbara, why don't you come on back up? Sorry about that. I know, welcome to the Oregon Legislature. Yeah, we're just trying to be sensitive of time. I apologize for that. Thank you for coming. If you could state your name, that would be great, please.
My name is Barbara Walsh, and I'm here today to testify in opposition to SB 559 and 560.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
It's important when you talk about PERS that you know that you are talking about people like myself. I've been an office specialist for child welfare in Medford for 5 years. Our caseloads are heavy and our families are struggling. And in my job, I support caseworkers. And it means a lot to me to be able to support the amazing work that they do. My time in child welfare actually started as a volunteer. Due to the recession, I, like many others, had to find a different kind of work. I met some people involved in child welfare and was so impressed with what they were doing, I just started volunteering and eventually was hired. It pays less than the private sector, but I'm in my 60s, and job security and retirement benefits matter a lot to me. I think people have a false idea about how much public employees make, and I don't make a lot, and I'm grateful for thrift stores, and I count every penny. And my salary isn't such that I can put much away for myself, but I do manage to stash about $100 a month. I've also heard people say that public employees do not contribute to their retirement, which is not true. I pay 6% of my pay every month towards my retirement, and if that 6% is taken to pay the state's unfunded liability, that's a flat-out pay cut that I can ill afford. I am about 10 years away from retirement. Financially, I will have to work until I'm about 77. If PERS was to be cut, retirement would not be an option for me. I think I would just work until I died in my cubicle. I think it's immoral that there are some that want to reduce the retirement benefits of people like me. It's immoral and frankly insulting. We provide an essential service to our community, and the private sector isn't going to take care of these vulnerable children. We are not in it for the money, but we shouldn't be forced to retire in poverty because we went into public service. Thank you for the opportunity, and please think long and hard about this program and keep in mind people like me.
Thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Senator Knope, I made an error in that we were supposed to move to 3 minutes per person when we went to the general public, so we are going to, she happened to have stayed on that, so we're all good, everyone's all the same. So our Sherry and Peggy, Sherry Holt and Peggy Kincaid.
They're not in the room yet.
They're not in the room yet.
Okay. The panel.
Okay, well, we'll go ahead. Have our Scott Winkles or Mark Thielman. Right, why she's weird.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Scott Winkles, and I represent the League of Oregon Cities. The League of Oregon Cities is an association of all 241 incorporated cities in the state of Oregon. I'd like to begin my testimony by pointing out that cities are currently sandwiched in between a property tax system that is not commensurate with costs and cost drivers that cities have no ability to control. PERS rates are set by the state, and the property taxes are capped due to the equations in 5 and 50. It's a dreadful but unavoidable algebra, but we simply cannot meet the needs of citizens with these two situations combined. We do believe that shifting the IAP contributions into the pension plan should be explored. I appreciate Senator Knope's comments that this is a starting point. The league believes that there are some various ways to do this that we should discuss at length. For instance, I believe Senator Montes Anderson commented that it doesn't need to be all of it. I think we can be open to a conversation where it's a partial contribution. Also, what the league is currently exploring is the possibility that the contribution be shifted over based on the funded status of the system. And so if the system were, say, funded in, if we're in rate collar territory, meaning that employers are getting hit with the increases, then it's shifted. And when the system is funded and flush, if you will, we can move that back into the IAP account. We encourage the committee to be creative and keep an open mind and recognize that the local government partners are really stuck between two anvils in trying to meet the needs of citizens moving forward. And with that, I will turn the testimony over.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. Are you Mr. Thielen?
Do I get his extra 1 minute and 8 seconds?
You do not, sir. I'm sorry.
Real quick, I'm going to reference some other superintendents have come. I told them to come up here because we didn't wear T-shirts, but we should have. I'm going to take a note from that. We're from a variety of superintendents from around the state.
Before you go forward, sir, can you please state your
name? Oh, yeah. I'm Mark Thielman. I'm an ALSI superintendent, and we're here to speak in general, not necessarily 100% for every word in these particular bills, but for the real need to reconsider PERS reform and revenue in relation. Because we can speak for our school districts. I was in a recent board meeting, I believe it was yours, Dr. Hess, where they were talking in the board meeting about 9% cuts. And a significant contributor to that is the fact that we're in a win-lose situation. For example, if PERS was...
Pardon me, sir, before you go on, which school district are we talking about here?
I'm from ALSI, he's from Lebanon.
Okay.
So great, what I'm saying is it's all around. We're all talking about it.
Yeah, no, I just, for the record, wanted to have the school district down.
Yes, no problem. So the gist is I'm looking at $70,000 increase due to the collared rate increase, mm-hmm. and I'm in a tiny school district. We're about $3.2 million, and that's the cost of a whole teacher. And I'm not getting a whole lot of more revenue because my enrollment is fairly flat. So these are real pressures, and they create what I call an individual versus community dilemma. We want to err on individual employees, both past, current, and future. At the same time, we are taxing the very services we're trying to provide. Not solving this problem overall, and I'll give Senator Knope some kudos for being brave to come out and say this, means that we're going to have fewer firefighters, fewer policemen, and fewer teachers in the future, but the population is going to continue to grow. These are facts. So what I wanted to bring to everybody's attention, and we were asked to say, I hear everybody talking about an IEP or taking it out of future OPSERP. The real money loser is in the defined benefit program side of the business. And how come has anybody talked about getting out of the defined benefit and talking about taking the same funds we currently pay and offering it back to employees in terms of better pay, in terms of higher percentages in some kind of, could be a 401k or an IEP style investment where the market itself grows on the national economy? And how come we're not talking about that? Because that's the real money win here. And I can pay my teachers more, which means there are going to be more people wanting to teach, which means I can then grow their total compensation by taking what I was paying in inordinately high retirement payments and turning that to whether it's health care or benefits or some kind of annuity or account that employees can then pick in terms of direct. Has there been any conversation about that? Because I haven't heard any.
Senator Miles Anderson?
So you're saying that 6% of a, let's say 6% of a member's salary goes into an IEP, and then the employers match the 6%, and it goes into the member's IEP, and then no guaranteed pension, but that's what they would have.
Yeah, but it could even be more than 6% when you look at the savings as the system, people under the previous one, and I hate to use the reference, but it sounded like we were hoping that folks on the PERS one side don't live as long as we would like them to. And it's just got a negative connotation. told the gal back there I would bring that up. We need to honor those obligations, but over time, those payments would go down on a natural basis. And it would help to not grow the unfunded actuarial liability or unfunded liability to what Senator Canope was probably fairly accurately saying. It's probably going to be somewhere between 30 and 50 billion. And we're not really prepared for that. So if the defined benefit side of the business is what's creating the real problem, how come we're not talking about getting out of that business and running those funds to some other kind of relationship?
So just so you understand, there are all sorts of concepts that are being brought forward. Mm-hmm. And are you working with a certain member of the legislature?
A few. They asked me to be here.
Okay. Well, great. Fantastic. So how this works is that you can go ahead after you're done testifying, obviously, is that we can have you meet with probably after the committee, talk with Jan, who is the committee administrator, and we can see about we are welcoming all concepts from the public. And so we can see what you're kind of flesh out a little bit more in detail what it is that you're thinking. And just so the public understands, there are other concepts and ideas that have come forward from the general public, and we can add yours to that, and we can examine it in a little more detail. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Okay. All right. So are we all – did you want to speak? I don't think your name was on the list, sir.
Oh, it wasn't.
Okay. All right.
I do have a question for Scott.
Yes, Senator Montesanderson.
Scott, I know that the city of Troutdale came and said that 30% of their payout is to PERS. And is 30% sort of an – and they're small. Troutdale's small. And I would love to have some information to say, are they typical across the board for cities? Or because I know from my school districts, they'll tell me exactly how much they're paying out for PERS. But I'd like to get a handle on small cities versus, you know, bigger cities and medium-sized cities on what their payout is.
Chair Taylor, Senator Montesanderson, all cities' PERS rates from the rate cycle, the biennium we're currently in and the next, are published on LOC's data website, and I will spread that link to the committee. There isn't really a – I don't know that there's a typical. We use a system-wide average number. Cities tend to pay a little bit below system-wide average. Schools tend to pay a little bit above system-wide average. But that doesn't – that the number that was conveyed to you by the city of Troutdale does not shock me at all.
Okay. Any other questions? And then we're going to go ahead and we're going to start having some other folks. So thank you all for coming up. Let's have Sherry Helt and Peggy Kincaid come up.
Madam Chair, as the next panel takes their seats, I'm going to excuse myself. I have another meeting, and thank you for your courtesy of letting me sit in.
Oh, of course. We're happy to have you as always, Senator Johnson. Okay, if you guys, both of you can please introduce yourself. I'll let you decide who you want to have go first.
Madam Chair, my name is Sherry Helt. I am on the Bend Lapine Schools Board. I'm also on the Oregon School Boards Association Board.
Okay, and?
Peggy Kincaid, also on the Bend Lapine School Board.
Okay, are you here to speak? You're here to speak in support of both bills.
In support of PERS reforms, yes, and we'll talk more specifically, individually.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I am here as a school board member from the Bend Pine Schools Board. Our district has over 18,000 students, and I am here on their behalf. I urge you to make some very difficult choices by making these changes to our current public employee retirement system. If you choose to look the other way and keep the system as it is today, I want you to know what it will mean for our students. This is not a short-term problem. This problem will go for the next 10 years. We have received our rate increases for the next 10 years that I had our business manager figure out for you so that you know exactly what this means. The next year, we know that our rates will increase by $4.35 million. And these are increased rates. These are not our PERS rates. That means that our board is going to have to make some decisions on how to balance this. We can cut teachers. 85% of our budget goes directly to staff. And we're still not recovered from the recession. We still are missing 25 teaching staff from the last recession. We can also cut days of our school year out of our calendar, and those days cost Ben Lapine Schools roughly $500,000 a day. We can also cut programs like CTE programs and things that we're really trying very hard as a state and as a district to put back in place. And so with these increases, I have a sheet that I'll hand you so that, because I'm going to give you a lot of numbers, and I know that that's hard to retain. We'll start out with $4.35 million the first year of the biennium. And then we move on to the second year of the biennium, and that will be an additional $5.1 million in increased PERS rates. The next year is $4.86 million in increased PERS rates, and the next year is $5.9 million in increased PERS rates, and the next year is $7.4 million in increased PERS rates. And then when we get to 2022, it peaks out at $9 million in increased PERS rates. When we get to 2023, we still have increased PERS rates, but they will be down to $2.9 million. 2024 will bring us $4.89 million in increased PERS rates. 2025 and 26 will bring us back down to $2.1 million in increased PERS rates. And then in 2026, we'll be at $4.3 million again, where we started off. This is a very long-term problem for our students. We still have not recovered from the recession that was 5 years ago in instilling back our teachers. If we cut teachers every year or hold open positions, I do not know how we will be able to educate our students and give them a fair education. So I would urge you to make some changes to our system for our students. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. If it's possible, we're here today to discuss these two bills, 559 and 560. And I want to remind everybody that's here today to testify. If you can attempt to testify to the specific bills, that would be very helpful, please.
Sure.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity today. Again, my name is Peggy Kincaid. My youngest child is a senior in high school this year, and I've been a Ben Lapine Schools parent for 19 years. This is my 10th year on the school board. I feel the weight of my assignment on the school board to prepare every child for future success. I'm in awe of the time, energy, and passion of the teachers I meet. Teachers have a huge impact on the future because they shape young minds and hearts every day. I'd like to share a brief story with you about not students, but pretzels. A poor old widow set up on a busy street corner every morning to sell soft pretzels for 50 cents each. Monday through Friday, a man in a suit walked by this corner on his way to work. The man did not care for pretzels, but he wanted to support the woman who sold them, so he always gave the vendor 50 cents, but did not take a pretzel. This went on for some time until finally one morning, after the man had performed the daily ritual and was walking away, the woman called him back. He said, "I know. You're wondering why it is that I never take my pretzel," to which she replied, "I could care less about that. I just want you to know the price has gone up to 75 cents. In this analogy, PERS is the pretzel vendor. The man in a suit represents today's teachers and indirectly students. They're not consuming the pretzels right now, but they are invested in the cause. It may be many years before they ever taste the pretzel. For the teachers when they retire, and I sincerely hope that PERS is still solvent by then, and for students in a more figurative way. We must take care of these teachers as they retire, but what are we sacrificing for the next 10, 20, 30 years to protect an unsustainable system? Oregon's PERS debts and liabilities are crippling our ability to serve today's students and teachers. Our teachers are trying to live on inadequate wages and teach growing numbers in their classrooms. Students have fewer opportunities in their schools because their teachers have no time for one-on-one instruction. Some are disconnected from school because the ratio of adults to students makes it extraordinarily difficult for every student to feel that an adult cares about them. It's not that the adults aren't trying, it's just that the resources are so stretched. I understand that Oregon's economy is growing steadily. We should be talking this legislative session about how we're going to spend new revenue, but instead we're trying to figure out how to cut programs and increase class sizes so that we can absorb looming PERS increases for the foreseeable future. It's incredibly frustrating and demoralizing. I'm looking for lawmakers who are bold and creative enough to tackle the problem. There's no perfect solution, but I invite you to chip away at the problem in many ways as you can find. In particular, Senate Bill 559 may have little effect on retiring career teachers who are topped out on the salary schedule while helping save the jobs of many young teachers whose positions are threatened by costs associated with the PERS UAL. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming. Okay, so next up we have Emily Gothard, Tiffany Linford, and Ilka Burton. Okay, so then after this, the next group up will be Terry Mills, Bob Livingston, and Jose Podin. Is Jose Podin? Sorry, boy, we're having a hard time reading. We have the duplicate here, so we apologize. So those three will come up next.
Chair Taylor, members of the committee, my name is Emily Gothard. I have been a paralegal with Portland State University since 2013. I'm an OPSERP employee, and I have a little over 28 years to go before I reach full retirement. I am here today to testify in opposition to Senate Bill 559 and Senate Bill 560. The average salary for paralegals in the Portland area is between $58,000 and $67,000. After 3.5 years on the job, I earn $18,000 less than the low end of average. I know that I could earn more elsewhere, but I believe in the work that I do for students at Portland State University. I choose this work because I believe in the mission. When you talk about cost savings, you are talking about cutting the compensation of people like me. I consider PERS a part of my salary. It is not a bonus. It's a promise that was made when I took the job and something I will rely on when I retire. I'm an OPSERP employee, and even though I didn't cause the unfunded liability, I'm being asked to pay for it. That isn't fair. If PERS is cut so severely that jobs like mine are no longer attractive, Oregon will not be able to recruit and retain qualified employees. I'm talking about teachers, firefighters, police officers, and nurses. People who, like me, do this work because we value public service and want to make Oregon a better state. If I left my job and was replaced by someone less qualified, it's the students at PSU who would suffer. The same goes for everyone if cuts like these hit our schools, hospitals, and first responders. That's what you're losing when you choose cuts. I hope you will make a different choice and decide to keep your commitment to the people who keep Oregon running. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I hope I can count on you to oppose Senate Bill 559 and 560.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record, please.
Chair Taylor, members of the committee, my name is Elka Bruton, and I am the talking book and braille librarian for the State Library. I'm here today to testify in opposition to Senate Bill 559 and 560. I'm a 10-year employee of the state, and someday after my decades of service come to an end, I will be a pensioner of PERS. The potential proposals to changes in PERS affect my ability to secure my future and are an offense to my years of loyalty to the state of Oregon. In 2009, during the last major budget shortfall, I took an average pay cut of $10,000 per year in forced furloughs, frozen step increases, and forfeiture of cost of living increases. All of this was in the first years of my career, which meant that in 2013, when those cuts were rescinded, as a six-year veteran of state service, I was making nearly the same amount of money that new hires in my field were making. But I believe in the work that I do, providing access to library materials for print-disabled Oregonians. I've had faith that the benefits over the course of my career would outweigh the bumps in the road. But now, once again, the question of balancing the state's budget shortfall is potentially being answered with yet more cuts to PERS. As State of Oregon employees, we care for your most vulnerable citizens, we protect your natural resources, keep your citizens safe, educated, and healthy. Balancing budget shortfalls on the backs of your state workers should not be an option on the table. We honor our commitment to the people of Oregon, and now we ask that you honor your commitment to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Taylor, members of the committee, my name is Tiffany Linford. I am here today to testify in opposition of SB 559 and SB 560. I have worked for the state for 3 years now and won't be eligible to retire for more than 20 years. One of my biggest fears is that I will never be able to afford to retire. All I ever hear about PERS is that it's under attack, that it's on the chopping block and ready to be cut. This year, the chorus has been particularly loud. I am also part of a generation that can't count on Social Security income being there when I retire. So I am relying on PERS for a retirement income that I can actually survive on. When I took my job at the Oregon Health Authority, the state made a promise that they would give me a salary and retirement benefits. I might earn less every month than what I could get in the private sector, but PERS makes up for that. Now, with legislators talking about taking away my retirement, I feel betrayed. I feel like you're going back on the deal. I am also worried about the impact this will have on the agency I work for. I am worried we won't be able to recruit and retain good, high-quality workers. Every session, when discussions about cutting PERS come up in the legislature, I have coworkers who decide to retire and lock in their plan instead of staying around another few years and risking cuts. We lose good people when the legislature threatens to cut PERS. And I imagine the headlines in the Oregonian are enough to turn people off from taking a job with the state. At some point, we need to draw the line in the sand and say enough is enough. I'm asking you to do just that. Instead of balancing the budget on the backs of hardworking people like me, please address the fact that Oregon is 50th in the country in corporate taxes. Thanks.
Thank you all for coming. Appreciate it. Next up, we are going to have Terry Mills, Bob Livingston, and Jose, how did we say, Podine. Up. And then next up after that will be Tyler Shipman, and then Travis Overly and Lisa Regal.
Okay. Chair Taylor and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of the Oregon Nurses Association. My name's Terry Mills. I'm an ONA member who has worked as a nurse educator for 40 years. As my mom said, age is just a number. ONA members who work as educators at Oregon's public institutions care for our kids in K through 12 school, work at county health departments throughout the state, are frontline workers at Oregon's Health and Science University, and they are all members of the public employment retirement system. There's a shortage of nurses working in the public sector in Oregon. This shortage has had a significant impact on Oregon's nursing workforce and on the health of many Oregonians. We rely on public sector nurses to educate and prepare our future nursing workforce, and currently we are turning away hundreds of qualified nursing school applicants every year because we don't have enough educators. For example, where I teach at Portland Community College, we have accepted 64 applicants for the class of 2018 out of 680. It's harder to get into PCC than Stanford. The Oregon State Legislature recommends one school nurse for every 750 students. Yet, our schools currently have less than one nurse for every 4,000 students. I taught today clinicals at Tualatin Hospital. I couldn't even keep track of 12 patients, so I don't know how they do it. According to the Center for Nursing, turnover in our public health nursing workforce has doubled since 2004. That's alarming. Despite the fact that we rely on public school sector nurses to care for our most vulnerable populations, their total compensation is far less than the average nurse working in the private sector. For example, a staff nurse who works 30 years in a county health department makes an average of $30 an hour, compared to their counterpart in a private hospital who's making $50 an hour after 30 years of service. A stable and secure retirement is a vital and necessary tool for recruiting and retaining nurses in these public sector positions. According to the Oregon Center for Nursing's report, the demand for nursing professionals, Oregon is facing a shortage of nurses in the public sector, and compensation is a significant factor in that. Further, eroding retirement benefits for current public sector nurses will only harm our ability to retain our current workforce and recruit nurses in the future. Jennifer Gould, a Multnomah County public health nurse who couldn't be here today, asked me to help share her story to better demonstrate what deep retirement cuts OPSRP members are facing with these Senate bills. They did an actuarially analysis and ran the numbers, and her individual account program would be slashed by 51%, over half if Senate Bill 560 passes, and 6% of Jennifer's salary is redirected to pay the state's obligation. And in addition to that, she faces losing 39% of her monthly pension if Senate Bill 559 passes. I strongly urge you to consider the impact that these Senate bills will have on our ability to provide care for those Oregonians who rely on nurses in the public sector. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, are we going to have, so Jose, you're going to go next, or is Bob
sure.
going to go next?
Sure.
Okay.
Go? Dear Chair Taylor and members of the committee, my name is Jose Padin. I'm a professor at Portland State University, where I've taught for 20 years. I'm president of the Oregon State Conference of the American Association of University Professors. It's a voluntary post. I have to keep my day job. Thank you very much for your service to our state and for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm here speaking on behalf of over 3,400 members of the American Association of University Professors in the state of Oregon, on behalf of the collective bargaining faculty unions at Portland State University and the University of Oregon, and of our members across the state. And I'm here to ask that you please oppose Senate Bills 559 and 560. These bills will hurt Oregon-dedicated and hardworking faculty, thereby hurting our higher education system and Oregon students. And this will create yet another formidable obstacle in the path of our state's 40-40-20 education goals. Faculty will take a big hit under SB 559 and 560. We will lose faculty. We will find it very difficult to attract new quality faculty in a competitive national market. It takes a long time, significant personal sacrifice and dedication, and considerable amount of debt to earn a PhD today. These days, many professors are part-time with very low salaries and may even lack basic health coverage. Oregon public universities have salaries that are much lower than elsewhere in the nation. PSU, for example, in 2014, salaries are in the bottom 8% of PhD granting institutions in the country. Retirement and related benefits that offer stability in one's life are one of the few remaining ways that we have of attracting and retaining talent. Oregon made a promise to hardworking citizens, and it should be keeping that promise to current faculty. SB 559 and 560 represent a significant disinvestment in Oregon higher education and move our state away from our long-term push to significantly raise the percentage of Oregonians with college degrees. Please oppose these bills. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Livingston.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bob Livingston. I'm the president of the Oregon State Firefighters Council, and I am nearing my 25th year of service to the city of Salem as a PERS member, and a proud PERS member at that. A couple of points, and in keeping with tradition of specifically, we're here to talk about Senate Bills 559 and 560. One thing I'd like to point out to you is that if you look at the actuarial analysis that is already done by Milliman, when it comes to the criteria that you're using, when it comes to how much these may have as it relates to reduction in cost, I would turn you to a Milliman report that was done in October 28, and I'll quote, and this is specific to the $100,000 cap, just as an illustration. Our valuation assumption portion of the analysis does not include any assumed change in participant behavior, such as retirement patterns due to the proposed changes in policy or to bargaining agreements or employer pay practices as a result of any legislative changes. Such potential impacts merit consideration. Actual experience will vary from assumption, and sometimes the variance from the assumption will be significant. The variance will affect the long-term financial impact of any proposed legislation. That sounds like a lot, I know, and after 22 years of experience on the subject matter, what that's telling you is that PERS can do the analysis of a certain proposal. What they don't do is they can't make a consideration of, if you save money in PERS here, what cost will that have from a total compensation? And what they're saying here is they're cautioning you that, you know, here's what we do know. 70% of all the unfunded liabilities, and Mr. Rodeman has done a great job of explaining this, are already baked into the system. Those are to honor the commitments that we've already made to those retirees that have left the system or those that are vested. A deal is a deal. And so, again, when you couple that as part of the criteria that you get to deliberate as you look at these bills, I think you need to do a further analysis to be wary of, as actuaries are noting, that there's other cost drivers that will be impacted, and the bottom line is you won't realize as much savings to those. In addition, I think it's also important as part of that criteria to remember that when Milliman has done the actuary analysis, Milliman is the PERS actuary, they do it not on what is the impact of the individual. They do it on how much money can we find from employer reliefs. And I think when you compare those criteria, we've heard from at least two individuals, and hopefully you'll hear from a third, that when we've done sound actuarial principles, we're anywhere from 30 to upwards of 55% reductions in our OPCERT members. I think the other thing that's important when we look at this from a fairness standpoint, let's remember, some of you, not all, were here in 2003, and in just 14 years, 52% of the entire Oregon public workforce is under a lesser OPCERT pension plan. And so as we go forward and deliberate this discussion, I think it's important to have historical context, but I also think that here soon we need to also turn our attention and simply put, 559 and 560 don't pass muster from a criteria standpoint that you, Madam Chair, and this committee has laid out, and that's why they should be opposed and not make it out of committee.
Okay, thank you all for coming to speak. Okay, so next up we're gonna have Tyler Shipman, and then Travis Overly, and Lisa Regal. And then after that, we're going to have Lindsay Dance, Ginny Ward, and Suzanne Cohen. Go ahead.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Taylor and members of the Senate Workforce Committee. My name is Lisa Regal. For the record, I am in strong opposition to SB 559 and 560. I live in Wood Village in Monty Anderson's district, and I'm proud each day to work with the students at Mount Hood Community College as an enrollment services specialist. I am a Tier 3 OPCERT member after 9 years of service at the college. I love interacting with, advocating for, and helping students fulfill their dreams. My fellow workers and I encourage and guide them from the moment they walk on campus to inquire about attending Mount Hood all the way through the graduation ceremony. It is a wonderful experience to watch them succeed and receive their degree. I love my job, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to serve students every day. While I don't do this work because I'm trying to get rich, the rapidly rising costs of living in the Portland metro area makes me worry what impacts it will have on me and my colleagues. Already we have a much lower retirement than those who came before us. After the cuts, the legislature passed in 2003 and 2013. If you cut our compensation by another 6% on top of the other previous reductions, it will be difficult for many workers to make ends meet, let alone thinking about retirement. Another negative impact will be encouraging highly qualified candidates to seek employment elsewhere. Public employees make a convenient target for legislator in difficult budgetary times. I am asking you to show real leadership and compassion for the people who are the backbone in your communities. We make them stronger and safer every day. I am imploring you to find ways to raise the revenue you need to balance the budget and to keep your promises to me and my coworkers. Thank you for your time.
Chair Taylor, members of the committee, my name is Tyler Shipman. I am a government relations specialist with the Oregon School Employees Association. Our association represents over 21,000 classified employees. I'm appearing today to speak in opposition of Senate Bill 559 and Senate Bill 560. The members of our association's average salary is only about $24,000 a year. So as you can imagine, none of our members are really getting rich off of PERS after they retire. And in fact, many of them continue to work just to survive. Senate Bill 559 and 560 would reduce these benefits even further, and we estimate that it would be a 30% reduction in their benefits for OPSERT members, making an already bad situation worse. Additionally, many of our members have chosen to work in education, not for the pay, but for the added benefit of working with children and also the pension that they were promised. These bills would, in a sense, break that promise, and I urge you not to move this legislation forward because of that. Thank you.
Members of the committee, my name is Travis Overly, and I'm a high school teacher, social studies teacher in Bend. I live in Mr. Senator Canope's district. And one thing I try to teach my kids every day, one theme that in all just about every single one of my lessons is empathy. And I want to take a minute and just acknowledge the people that are sitting behind me. These are human beings, and I think a lot of times when we read the headlines in the paper and we talk about PERS, it's very dehumanizing. And so these people protect us while we sleep, and they teach our children, and we can never, ever forget that. I'm going to reiterate a lot of the talking points that have already been said. Recruiting and keeping good teachers in our school district is absolutely a priority. My wife is also a teacher in the school district. We're both OPSERT members. It has the lowest pension benefit with an added individual account. And I'll go through those actuary numbers that they ran for me as well. When the actuary ran the numbers for me on what my account will be worth when I retire in 2043. Oh, by the way, how many people have children here? Okay. So 30 years. Have you met your kids? Or your neighbor's kids? Your kids might be really good, but your neighbor's kids may, or your relatives' friends, relatives' children might behave a little differently. So I just want you to consider, in 2043, after this time that I've put in, where I'll be as a human being. You will take back, back to those actuary numbers. By the way, I'm in opposition to Senate Bill 560. If it passes, my contributions start being diverted to the pension fund. You will take back 75% of my individual retirement account if Senate Bill 560 passes, leaving it worth less than $55,000 in $2,043. Combined with a pension cut, you will take back nearly 28% of my total retirement package. We did not have those numbers run for my wife, but we are about the same age and have about the same number of years left before retirement, so I assume it would be similar. I became a teacher after going to school on the GI Bill. I knew it wouldn't be a high-paying job compared to other things I could do with a graduate degree, but I was drawn to it because I had some really great teachers when I was younger, and I wanted to give back to my community. But I do not see how we would be able to afford to keep teaching. These kinds of cuts go far beyond breaking the promises made to us when we were hired. This is a state raid on our personal retirement accounts. As I know you're aware, OPSERT members like me do not drive the PERS unfunded liability. I'll just stop there.
Okay, thank you so much. Can you tell me, what's the name of the firm that did your actuarial analysis? Just the name of the company?
It's the same one that did. I'm not sure. I can get back to you on that, though.
Okay. Just wanted to keep track of the different firms that are being discussed. Okay, thank you all for coming. Yeah. All right, so next up we have Lindsay Dance, Ginny Ward, and Susan Cohen. And then after that we'll have Paul Kylo, Patrick Leach, and Brian Lewis. Okay, who wants to start?
Good afternoon, Chair Taylor and members of the committee. I am Suzanne Cohen. I'm an educator in Portland Public Schools. I've taught special education and middle school math science. I am currently serving as the president of the Portland Association of Teachers. Both of my teaching positions, special ed and math science, are positions that Jared mentioned are very difficult to hire for across the state. I'm also a Tier 3 OSPER member, and I'm 40 years old and have already started planning for my retirement. So I have to say that I was completely shocked when I heard about these Senate bills. We are not talking about small tweaks to workers' retirements here. We are talking about essentially doing away with the most important part of the public employee retirement benefits altogether, and it's outrageous. To take away worker retirements at this point in time, after years of disinvestment in education, in public services, and multiple rounds of cuts to retirement benefits, I find this to be unacceptable. Teaching is already a very, very difficult profession, and increasingly difficult to recruit, hire, and retain new and talented professionals. So in Portland, our starting salary, as was mentioned, is $38,000, and if you are lucky, you can find a simple one-bedroom apartment that will cost $1,000 a month in rent. So how are public service employees going to continue to make ends meet, let alone think about retiring with security and dignity someday? How are we going to recruit new special ed teachers, speech pathologists, school counselors, school nurses, math and science teachers like myself, educators in general, while we systematically chip away at the few financial benefits that do exist? Meanwhile, Oregon continues to be the state with the lowest corporate taxes in the nation, and we need to get our priorities straight. Please stop attacking the workers that Oregonians count on for the most vital public services. Show true leadership, fix our tax structure, our overall funding for key services. Keep the promises you've made to Oregon educators and other workers, and do the right thing for all Oregonians. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Lindsay Dance, and I'm a public school teacher. I'm an OPSERP member, which means I received the lowest level of retirement benefit. I live in Southeast Portland in Senator Taylor's district. Thank you for allowing me to share my story with you today. I teach Spanish at West Tualatin View School in Beaverton. I have six classes totaling about 140 children from kindergarten to fifth grade that I see every day. I find the work extremely rewarding, and I love working with the children, helping them get excited about learning a second language. I did not go into public service for the money or for financial reward. As such, my salary does not have much room to save for retirement. I thought that was okay because I had the promise of my PERS benefit. I thought it made financial sense to sacrifice salary today knowing that I would have retirement security later. I do not know how I could possibly afford to continue teaching in a scenario where my future retirement benefits were to be cut 30 to 40%. There is no way I can make up those losses with my current salary. I've heard people here in Salem praise these shocking reductions as a means to hire more teachers in the classrooms. I do not mean to be disrespectful, but it is just flat out wrong. These cuts will mean fewer, not more, teachers in the classroom because, like me, young and eager teachers will have to look elsewhere for their careers. It is already difficult to retain talented people. I'm here to ask you, please do not do this. I appreciate that you have difficult choices, but I was hired long after the PERS reforms. Me and my PERS cohort are not burdening the system. Please do not make it impossible for me to continue working with children in the profession that I have grown to love. Please do not force the state into another round of expensive and lengthy lawsuits that will create uncertainty and could make things worse. Please do not break your contract to provide a secure retirement for teachers like me. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Taylor and members of the committee. My name is Jenny Ward, and I am an educational assistant at Prairie Mountain School in Bethel School District in West Eugene. I have been an educator for 10 years, beginning with the Bethel School District in 2007. Additionally, I serve as the president of the Bethel Association of Classified Employees, representing our district's educational support professionals, such as fellow educational assistants, cooks, custodians, and bus drivers. As you might guess, school district classified employees are not highly paid. In addition to our low hourly wage, many of our workers only are able to get a few hours of work a day. The district keeps many workers below the threshold at which they can receive and qualify for health benefits, especially insurance benefits. This makes it difficult for many of the workers I represent to meet daily expenses, let alone to think about setting aside any money for retirement. For many, their PERS and Social Security will be the only thing that supports in their retirement, and they're able to if they're able to retire at all. Already, we have experienced dramatic reductions to our benefits through the 2003 and 2013 cuts to PERS benefits. Now the legislature is considering a state raid on members' individual accounts. This is not the state's money. This money belongs to the hardworking people, the men and women who keep our schools running. Please do not continue to hack away at the retirement benefits of the public employees who are least able to afford these cuts. Keep the state's promise to its workers. To fill the budget holes, show the leadership that Oregonians are looking for, and finally raise Oregon's 50th in the nation corporate taxes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming. We're going to go ahead and bring up the next group. Paul Kylo, Patrick Leach, and Brian Lewis. And then we just have one more panel after that, everybody. If everyone can just, folks have come a long way, so it would be great if people could stay to listen to them. We have Peg without a last name, a retired AFSCME member in
Brian.
Tasha Graybar from the Tualatin Valley Firefighters, I assume. And then Aaron Baer, just says Clackamas. So who would like to start here?
Go ahead.
Okay. I will.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Chair Taylor and Co-Chair Knopf and members of the committee for allowing me time to speak. My name for the record is Brian Lewis. I'm a member of PERS since 1985. I work with Oregon's most vulnerable and dangerous Oregonians at the Stabilization and Crisis Unit. I began my career at Fairview Training Center, where I grew up as my mother was a physician and unit director there from 1962 to 1976. Well, when I'm presenting on PERS, we are talking about not only me, but of my family. At one point, my mom was number 27 in PERS earnings, and thank goodness, because she now needs in-home care herself, dependent on the support to avoid living in an intermediate care facility as she used to work, similar. In my 17th year in service, I determined I was going to stay with the state, despite my earnings potential could be greater in private sector. I am committed to supporting the folks we serve, and because I valued the retirement benefit I would someday receive, a promise that was made to me. The problems with PERS were self-inflicted by the PERS board, the banking system, and corporate America. Think 2008. For example, I selected the variable rate option and yet witnessed the board pay, I recall, 22% or something to that effect every 1 year. I noticed that and thought right away that it was wrong to pay over the guaranteed fixed amount to all. Then in 2003, the system created the IAP accounts and, in my opinion, broke a promise with the way I felt PERS should be. It hurt even worse as I stayed with the variable when the Great Recession happened. The corporate proposals to cut retirement benefits for public workers are extreme, illegal, and break promises made when I was hired. If these bills pass, you will take the money that goes into our individual retirement accounts away, use it to pay the state's investment losses for PERS that will drastically reduce the individual retirement accounts for people. The bottom line is that the state leaders should honor the deal made with us and not change the PERS now. Benefits to retirees have already been reduced to the extent legally possible. We can't afford to have high turnover in essential public services. As I said, I chose to stay and serve largely factoring the PERS benefit as a motivation. In 2007, the pension system had more than enough funds to pay future benefits. As I mentioned earlier, the great 2008 recession affected that, and that was not my doing. It was the way of the banking system and of corporate greed. I need about 15 seconds. There was also a housing crisis. Recall Greenspan's famous words, irrational exuberance in the early 2000s. All this affected PERS, just like other retirement accounts. All took a serious hit. Now the same bankers and corporations who caused the recession want us to pay back the pension fund. I am upset with the Measure 97 failing. I would offer that the troubled lack of ability to gain a meaningful tax system to support the needs of our state is so deeply unfair. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Taylor, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today. My name is Patrick Leach. I have lived in Oregon for 8 years, and the entire time I've lived in Clackamas County and been an employee at Clackamas County. I am a chemist by trade, and I work at the water quality lab analyzing wastewater from our treatment facilities and surface water from our local creeks and rivers for pollutants. When I decided to move to Oregon, a big part of what got me to accept this position was the retirement benefit. I'm an OPSERT member, and I know that I will be receiving less of a benefit than my Tier 1 and Tier 2 colleagues. I never begrudge them this or speak disparaging of it at work, and that does go on sometimes, because I know it's what they were promised. And the OPSERT benefit that I was promised helps me to stay in this position. Private positions in my industry, in my particular trade, don't necessarily pay more, but there is a much better opportunity for advancement of your skills and for career advancement. But this is also my first public job, I should say. And I found something that I've become very proud of is that I can use my skills in chemistry to protect public health and our local watersheds in Clackamas County, of which we are extremely proud. And the PERS incentive helps me to do this and offset the slower career path that I would have in the public sector work. But I am extremely proud and plan on staying in this. This is also the first job I've had longer than 4 years. And I've stayed longer than I've expected, and it's mostly for my great pride in being able to have my work serve the public and benefit them and myself as well as I live there. I would ask you to seriously consider voting no on these bills that would, from my viewpoint, add complexity and another layer of class to the PERS system by eliminating the IAP accounts. And thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Senator Taylor and committee. Thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is Paul Kylo. I live in Northeast Salem, House District 22 and Senate District 11. I am a member of the Salem-Keizer School Board, but I'm speaking as an individual today. I'm concerned that the proposed changes to PERS in Senate Bill 559 and Senate Bill 560 will make it more difficult for Salem-Keizer and other school districts to recruit and retain employees. Salem-Keizer is experiencing the same hardships in recruiting teachers as other districts and the nation as a whole. The schools of education in Oregon cannot produce enough graduates in education to fill all of the needs in the state of Oregon at this time. So we are recruiting nationally to try to find people in science, math, as you heard, ELL and other subjects, particularly special ed. In Salem-Keizer School District, we have anywhere between 20 and 30 openings that we are unable to fill on a given day. Not people needing subs, but actual real live openings that we could put people into if we could hire them. And we can't find them to hire. And it's my belief that at this point in time, one of the major recruiting tools that we use to get these teachers to come to Oregon is the retirement system, hoping we can hook them to say that you'll have a better retirement in Oregon after a 30-year career than you would in your home state. And that is something we use. The other problem we have in Salem-Keizer is that we have a lot of long-term employees who are waiting currently to find out what changes are coming. At this point in time, we know that roughly 34% of our workforce can retire today if they so chose, if the changes to PERS were such that they felt they were not advantageous to them. So we, again, besides our normal hiring, we would have another 30 to 34% we would need to be looking for. And again, these are senior staff who would be the advanced math, the advanced English, special ed, all of these various and sundry groups. We also believe that the proposal to shift the 6%, quite frankly, having been a part of negotiations for well over 20 years, we know that there would be attempts to make the employees whole, which again would cost us classrooms and programs, But if we don't have teachers, classrooms don't do us a lot of good. So we would be looking for ways to make that happen. Also, one little sub piece is that if we do find ways to make them whole, that money potentially would be taxable where now it's not, which again would be an extra cost to the district, which we have concerns about. With that, I'll finish. Thank you.
Okay.
My testimony's there. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have our final group. We're going to have Peg. I'm not sure what the last name is. Okay. Here she is. And Daisha Graybar and Aaron Bayer, please come up. Thank you, everybody, for waiting. And then we will have some closing comments.
Glasses? Somebody?
Okay. Debbie, we have these here. If anybody left a pair of glasses that testified earlier, they're up here. So if anyone knows who they may be, that would be helpful so they can not, when they get home, wondering why they
Bob
can't.
Livingston?
No, Bob's got his.
They look like yours.
Okay, so we don't have, Aaron is not here. So we're going to go ahead. Is that correct? He was our one neutral person. I was going to have him go last for a sake of harmony, but I failed miserably. So we're going to pressure's all on Peg and Daisha to go ahead and have us leave, hopefully, on a peaceful note. So, okay.
Chair Taylor, members of the committee, my legal name is Peg. It is a single name.
Okay. I apologize.
You didn't know?
Right, and so I'm very sorry. I didn't mean to offend you. I apologize.
That's all right. No offense was taken. I am a PERS retiree,
okay.
And I'm very proud of my 30 years of service to the people of Oregon. I rise to talk to you today in opposition to these two bills. I sat through the three informational hearings that the committee held, and they were really good ones. And listening closely to PERS Director Rodman's information, the 2003 reforms are, in fact, now working. They weren't intended to go back and retroactively fix. They're working from here forward. And then the legal decision from the Oregon Supreme Court in the Morrow case pretty clearly defines that you can't do retroactive changes. And I've heard the committee wrestle with this. Both Senate Bill 559 and 560 literally unfairly punish today's PERS workers, those on what we frequently call Tier 3, OPSERPs, and even those on Tier 2, asking them to make up for a deficit that comes from a probably overgenerous plan that I got to retire and take advantage of, and the stock market crash in 2008, and the fact that corporate taxes pay a far smaller portion of the Oregon general fund budget than they did when I hired on in 1973. While there are deficits, while there is an unfunded liability looming, it is not fair to ask this small population to fund it. And so I urge the committee to please look further to find a way to go ahead and keep the promises made in contract and law to all PERS members and to make it fair and spread that expense to all of Oregon, literally, instead of asking this small percentage of the population to pay for it. Thank you for your time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, senators, and staff, thank you very much for this opportunity to testify in opposition of the proposed bills. My name is Dacia Graber. I have been a professional firefighter and paramedic for 10 years, almost half, in Washington County. I am an OPSERP member, which, as others have mentioned, is the lowest PERS benefit. If Senate Bill 559 and 560 were to pass, I would be facing reductions that my family cannot absorb or prepare for. My husband is also a firefighter, which means we are a two-PERS family. We would take a double hit. We have 5 children and 4 left to put through college. With our family and many obligations, we do not have the ability to make up these extreme reductions in the retirement benefits we were contracted under and that we are counting on. I love being a firefighter. I also love bringing people into the fire service, especially other women and minority populations. I lead the Equity and Inclusion Committee for our union. I spend time at schools, colleges, trade shows, and the Portland Metro Fire Camp, and share my passion for the job with people who maybe didn't think firefighting was an option for them. I talk about how incredible it feels to be part of something larger than yourself, to truly work as a team, and what it means to live a life of service. I encourage them that if they work hard and love caring for people and their community, this career will take them places they never thought possible. I tell them that firefighters are appreciated and respected members of their community. I tell them that as we, without hesitation, serve and uphold our commitments, our employers will keep theirs. I hope I don't have to tell them I was wrong. Please vote no on Senate Bill 559 and Senate Bill 600. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Very nice to end on that note. That is everybody who signed up to testify. So does anybody have anything else they want to bring forward at this time? I'd really appreciate everyone staying. So our next meeting, ladies and gentlemen, is Wednesday, February 15th. We will have an informational hearing on PERS financing and investment management. What that is code for is we're going to have a conversation on Wednesday about the possibility of what I call in layman's terms refinancing the unfunded liability. And that is a somewhat of a controversial issue, so but we're going to go ahead and have that discussed openly. We are going to have three different individuals come and speak on Wednesday, and those are, Jan, do you have the, right there in front of you, I know we have Mr. Shervin, he's the Oregon Investment Council Chief Investment Officer, and we have, here we go, I have the individuals here. We have Laura Lockwood McCall is going to come on Wednesday, John Shervin, again, Oregon Investment Council Chief Investment Officer. Mr. Rodman, once again, will be here, and he's going to talk to us about UAL amortization period. And then Senator Canope is going to talk about three additional ideas. There are ideas at this point about some things around the PERS issues. And so we're going to, they're not concepts yet, they're not bills yet. We're just going to simply have a conversation about those on Wednesday. But I wanted everyone, because I know there's a lot of folks watching, so they know what's up next on Wednesday. If anybody has any questions, feel free to stay afterwards and we can get those questions clarified. So as a reminder, the deadline to submit any PERS proposals is at the end of this month, February 28th. So please bring those forward to committee staff or to my office. And we're going to go ahead and adjourn the meeting for the Senate Committee on Workforce. Thank you for coming. Workforce. Thank you for coming.